These are ideas that have support from Democrats, have support from Republicans around the country, independents around the country. I want to work with Congress to get them done. But when Congress refuses and as a result hurts our economy and puts our people at risk, then I have an obligation as president to do what I can without them. I've got an obligation to act on behalf of the American people. And I'm not going to stand by while a minority in the Senate puts party ideology ahead of the people that we were elected to serve. Not with so much at stake, not at this make or break moment for middle class Americans. We're not going to let that happen.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. I'm the viewer's Alan Nathan, the militant moderate. Once again, this is the Oasis for those who have an aversion to the left, right, black, white, two-dimensional approach. You were listening to the musings of President Obama. He's saying, I have an obligation as president to do what I can without Congress. Of course, by that measure, any time a president would find himself having difficulty with the politics of opposition on Capitol Hill, he or she, respectively, would have the right to go ahead and essentially violate the very document from which his power, as well as the powers of both the legislative and the judiciary, are originating, and not think twice about it. But you've got to remember, folks, again, the Constitution is the people's written directive to the very government it created. And not one of these effing branches has the right to thwart the mandates of the very document from which their powers are derived and to which they're each subordinate. Period. Full stop. There is no exception. And at one point or another, the people in power today will be formidably disabused of the assumption that they can continue getting away with what they've been getting away with. Hopefully the election will do it. But what I don't think they understand is just how dangerous their behavior is. Because the only time the United States citizenry can legitimately revolt against its government is when that government has been caught red-handed violating that Constitution. Again, the people's directive to the very government it created. It's kind of odd to think that on one hand, the president wants us to respect his binding authority, but on the other hand, wishes to trash the very document that provides for that authority. Can't have one without the other. But assisting me in the opining with, I'm sure, a couple of antithetical perspectives, old friend of the show, one of my regulars, Mark Levine. He is former congressional attorney and Washington, D.C. talk host. He's heard on Pacifica Radio's WPFW. You can learn more about Mark by going to www.marklevineradio.com. Again, marklevineradio.com. Happy New Year and welcome back. Mark, how are you today?
Happy New Year, Alan. I'm good.
Well, let's get right to it. We've got this big thing. The president essentially installed Richard Cordray to head the new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau.
Yeah,
a lot of the people in the GOP are claiming it's a violation of the Constitution because the Senate has technically not been in recess, as they see it. They further claim that precedent over the last 20 years has been that at least 10 days must pass with Congress out of session in order for recess appointments to be made. Democrats, however, arguing that because Republicans are holding pro forma sessions every 3 days, they can effectively block the president from ever having a recess appointment. What's your assessment of this? How do you see this unfolding in the days and weeks ahead?
I can't think of a clearer case under the Constitution for President Obama to do what he did. I'm glad he did. As you know, recess appointments are specifically provided for in the United States Constitution. Both Harry Truman and Dwight D. Eisenhower did it when Congress was in recess for just a very few minutes. Lyndon Johnson did the same. And what's fascinating to me is, of course, Ronald Reagan did some three times the number of recess appointments that Obama has done at this time in his term, particularly in a case like this where no one in the Senate has any questions about his qualifications. All the Senate wants to do is they want to repeal a bill which they are constitutionally unable to repeal because they don't have the votes to do it, but a bill they passed last session. And what they said is we think Richard Cordray's fine, but we don't want to put him to the office because we don't like the legislation that we're not able to repeal, and particularly in a case when the majority of the Senate supports Cordray but isn't allowed to vote because of a filibuster. And as you know, filibustering a nominee is particularly rare in the Senate. In all these cases, the constitutional argument is extremely strong, and I'm very glad that Barack Obama did it.
Well, the fact is, according to the Constitution, there is no specific number of days for a session to be suspended. There's no particular number of days that constitute an official recess, if you will. However, what the Republicans say do have a little bit of resonance to some extent, because granted, it might not be a violation of the Constitution what the president has done specifically, although I believe on another end it is, and I'll point that out to begin with. It doesn't have to do with this particular argument. But what it is indeed a violation, apparently, has been precedent, because over the last 20 years, indeed, there was an agreement essentially complied with by both parties, at least in their behavior, that at least 10 days must pass with Congress out of session in order for a recess appointments to be made. Now, again, Democrats are arguing that because the Republicans are holding no pro forma sessions every 3 days, or rather they are holding pro forma sessions every 3 days, they can essentially block Obama from ever having another recess appointment. But I think what's difficult for the Democrats is that, to the objective observer anyway, it appears that they can give it, but they can't take it. What I mean is, let's take a look at the Washington Post. The Washington Post reported that Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid blocked Bush's recess appointments by applying the very same exact tactic in 2007 and 2008. Now, I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute. As Democrats in the White House now criticize this behavior as a quote-unquote sham, do you think any of them will acknowledge that it must have also been a sham when they used it too? Good for the goose, good for the gander. In observation, would you go along with that, Mark Levine?
Here's the difference. Republicans have broken 200 years of precedent.
I asked a very direct question, a Socratic show. Point, counterpoint.
Right,
are you now going to say that what you have asserted now is a sham was not a sham when practiced by the Democrats?
It's not the same thing, and I'm explaining why. The reason it's why it's not the same thing is that Republicans have broken 200 years of precedent by filibustering every single appointee of this president. No Congress in American history has ever done that before, and Republicans are not filibustering the man because they don't like
him. They can each point to what the other's never done before. They can each do that. By that measure, any argument can be expanded into a multitude of other arguments, allowing you to escape from your half of the original rub. Why? Because you couldn't defend it. You can't go away. Those are, if you will, tertiary measures. They're not primary measures. The only primary measure is the one born out of the original rub first exposing the conflict.
Alan,
right now, you have a group of people saying that what the other side is doing is a sham, even though they themselves did it a few years ago. People have a real problem with those who belong to the do-as-I-say, not-as-I-do club. How do you validate that?
It's not true, Alan, and there's a big difference. The difference is that Democrats were filibustering a specific person. They were saying, for example, that someone who's an avowed racist should not be a federal judge. You can agree or disagree with them on that, but they were disagreeing with a specific person. Republicans have said they have no problem with Richard Cordray. He's actually a Republican who used to work for Republican justices like Anthony Kennedy.
True, yeah. They're fine with him. They're fine with him. You're right.
They have no problem with him. What they dislike
they have no problem with
the
him.
Law. What they dislike
they
is
dislike the
law.
Right.
What they dislike solely is a law that was constitutionally passed under the Constitution, got beyond a filibuster, got more than 60 votes, a bipartisan law.
Actually, you do know it would fail constitutional muster if challenged. You do realize that law is going to fail constitutional muster if challenged because it allows for the head to be answerable to no one. No one. You're leaving that little item out, aren't you? Why are you leaving that little item out? You do realize we're talking about a bureau answerable to sod all, nobody, except the Federal Reserve, which means that these people get to behave as they wish without congressional oversight because it's only under the auspices of the Federal Reserve. You're acting, it's bizarre. You're characterizing a valid concern as if it's somehow an inappropriate outrage. I always love it when people characterize as inappropriate somebody else's resistance to their own inappropriate behavior, especially this kind of blatant authoritarianism. But I'm going to give you a chance to prove me wrong upon a return. Stick with us. You are with Battleline, Main Street Radio Network. I'm Alan Nathan. Joining us again, an old friend of the show, none other than Mark Levine, former congressional attorney and Washington, D.C. radio host on Pacifica Radio's WPFW. Again, you can learn more about Mark at www.marklevineradio.com. By the way, you hear us go at it over the air, but we really do get along well. We've been in my home, and we enjoy each other's company. And actually, we agree with one another quite often on Middle Eastern affairs, and I want to get into a bit of that very soon. But first, Mark, welcome back. And as promised, I wanted to give you a chance to respond to what we were talking about earlier. We were talking about of course, the bill or this bureau that's been created that's the source of so much controversy, this Consumer Protection Bureau. And I was pointing out that the Republicans aren't very happy with it because they say there's essentially no congressional oversight, which many of them think is unconstitutional. This new bureau would only be answerable to the feds. Hence the reason why the GOP are trying to fight every nominee for a law that has otherwise officially passed. What are some of your thoughts as to why you feel this particular legislation will survive in the years ahead, Mark Levine?
Well, I have a lot to say on that. First, I do want to announce that in addition to my show on WPFW, I'm opening on a new radio station. It's called We Act Radio, AM 1480, for anyone living in the Washington, D.C. area. We're going to have the Inside Scoop on Sundays from noon to 3 every Sunday, so people can listen in for that. To answer your question, Alan, I got to tell you, I think sometimes you filibuster when you know that I'm right. Here's what I think you know I'm right about. You know there's only one constitutional way to pass legislation. It's very, very clearly spelled in the Constitution. The Senate has to pass it, the House has to pass it, and the President has to sign it. Now, a year ago, when Dodd-Frank was passed, the Republicans did everything they could. Wall Street buddies spent millions of dollars on lobbying. They knew that they did not want to be regulated because they want to gamble with taxpayer dollars, and they don't want the Democrats to stop them from doing that. But against this incredible headwind of corporations saying we have the right to commit fraud, we have the right to defraud consumers, you can't stop us from defrauding consumers, defrauding consumers is the American way, the Congress, in a bipartisan bill, got past the filibuster and passed the great Dodd-Frank bill. I think there were 59 Democrats and 4 Republicans at 63 votes, passed the filibuster, got signed into law. Now Republicans don't like that legislation. They didn't like it when it was passed. They didn't like it in committee. They didn't like it on the floor.
All laws can be challenged afterwards on constitutional grounds. You know that. Both Democrats and Republicans have challenged laws on constitutional grounds. Just because a piece of legislation, wait a minute, just because a piece of legislation may have been constitutionally passed doesn't mean that by default it is constitutional. So why assert one as if it's an explanation for the other? You know better than that, Mark. You know better than that.
You and I both know there's no constitutional challenge to this legislation. If they want to do that, they can go to the courts. Really, what the Republicans
are
saying is we want to be able to repeal legislation without going through the Constitution. We want to repeal legislation by fiat. We want to repeal legislation by saying that we will.
They can stop appointments. They can stop appointments. You're complaining about the very Constitution you're defending. You're complaining about the very Constitution you're complaining.
I want to go.
No, think about it. You are complaining about the very Constitution you're defending.
Not at because all. Look, like the Constitution.
Extreme hyperbolic opposition on Capitol Hill is perfectly constitutionally permissible, including the blocking of appointments, and both sides of the aisle have done it.
This is
a quid pro quo reality. You know
that.
These guys are guilty of reciprocal delays and painstaking deflection.
Alan, you can oppose legislation all you want, but once the legislation becomes law,
and you can oppose appointments. You can oppose appointments. You know that, Mark.
No amount of caution by the Republicans can make this law not a law. The only way to make it not a law in the Constitution is to go by the Constitution.
Now, it is a law right now. I agree with you, Mark. Not even you can argue with somebody who agrees with you. It is a law until it is shown to be unconstitutional. I can tell you, over the air that I personally think it is unconstitutional, but until it passes that kind of test, and goes through a failure or success in the courts, then by default, let me finish because you're going to love hearing this. By default, until it is challenged and successfully overturned in the courts, it is by default assumed constitutional until shown otherwise. I can personally think it's not and that it will be overturned, as I do believe with the Affordable Care Act, the Obama's Affordable Care Act. But until it goes through the process, nobody can with any certitude claim that it's unconstitutional officially. Right now, until it's proven otherwise, it's an official law. I'm giving you that. I want to right now go back to the recess question because here's the thing. Technically, you're right and I concur. Whether it's 3 days, 3 minutes, or 3 seconds, if there's a time during which you have a recess appointment, the president, regardless of his or her respective party affiliation, has the right to shove those through. I agree with you on that. And even though there was a precedent, a gentleman's precedent, where in 07 and 08, when Reid did it to Bush, Bush respected it, but now that it's being done to Obama, he won't. Fine. That, too, can also be pushed aside. Maybe we'll say it's just not very gentlemanly. There's an absence of quid pro quo. Fine. So let's get to the actual rub itself. Let's look at what the Constitution says about recess appointments. The president shall have power to fill up all vacancies that may happen during the recess of the Senate by granting commissions which shall expire at the end of their next session. However, guess what, my friend? That may happen during the recess of the Senate, not those that have been happening. You see what I mean? You're talking about present perfect. You're talking about past perfect here. Those that have been happening. Continuous past perfect. There's a disparity between those two. It's one thing to say that you can fill a vacancy that just pops up during the recess versus saying that you can fill up a vacancy that's been ongoing in its existence prior to the recess in question. How do you see that particular inquiry being handled, Mark Levin?
I would say that the 43 presidents prior to Obama, not sure about William Henry Harrison, he's only there 40 days, but every other president has had recess appointments exactly that didn't become vacant during that time, but even new stuff. Ronald Reagan did it, George Bush Sr.
You're right.
George Bush Jr.
You're absolutely correct.
So
completely
you have to
agree.
Overturn,
I just genuinely believe.
No,
ex post facto stuff, you don't have to worry about it. If it's already happened, it's already happened. But from this point on, I think the Supreme Court, if given this case, could rule accordingly. That's if we have any regard for the Queen's English. You know, words have meaning. And if you're going to use these words, what you say must have something to do with what they mean. You know, there is, denotatively or connotatively, a disparity between those vacancies that may happen during the recess versus those that have been happening prior to the recess. But I want to move on to something else. I really want to ask you about your view of New Hampshire. Do you think there's really going to be the traditional three tickets out of Iowa, or will perhaps only two of those tickets have traction because Santorum doesn't really have anywhere near the ground forces enjoyed by Romney and Paul when looking to New Hampshire as well as South Carolina and Florida? This is fascinating. What's your take on it?
Well, I think Santorum's got a real chance in South Carolina and Florida. I agree he doesn't have much of a chance in New Hampshire, but New Hampshire often gets it wrong. Remember, New Hampshire went for Pat Buchanan. New Hampshire went for Paul Tsongas. I agree that Santorum's got an uphill battle in New Hampshire. Mitt Romney was, he was the governor of the neighboring state. He's going to win New Hampshire. But I would certainly not count Santorum out. I think he and Newt Gingrich and Ron Paul are in it for the long haul.
Also, Rick Santorum recently asserted that states should have the right to ban contraception. So apparently on this, he's all about states' rights, but on euthanasia, civil unions, gay marriage, not so. You know, the irony here is that sometimes the Republicans and Democrats, they'll both switch to federal babysitting being more important versus states' rights, depending upon which ox is being gored. I think that kind of observation or that kind of position would haunt Rick Santorum in the long run. What say you, Mark Levin?
I'd say that both politicians and both parties are hypocritical on states' rights.
If I agreed with you anymore, I'd be a tape recorder. Great having you, Mark Levin. All the best. Folks, stick with us. You are with Battleline, Main Street Radio Network. I'm Alan Nathan.